We live in a global era characterized by PTSD. Maybe in your own life you're familiar with how post-traumatic stress disorder works. Traumatic violence distorts memories and the way we experience time, making violence repeat on a loop like a record skipping, changing how we see and talk about ourselves. The witch hunts were one trauma against women and against the earth, and against a worldview that saw holiness and spirituality as the birthright of every being. They were also a weapon in the global violence of colonialism. And as we work to disrupt androcentrism, the mind frame that sees masculinity as normal and all else as other, with feminist history, and to heal from the violence of colonialism, and to resist the worst of earth-eating capitalism however the fuck we can, it is useful to go looking for places outside of Europe and the Americas where women were and are called witches. One of the many places this happened is in the Philippines, and in investigating this branch of witch history, it draws us back before the colonial trauma, to honor the women folk therapists, priestesses, warriors, healers, storytellers called Babaylan, and forward to honor the badass feminists who carry the Babaylan spirit today. In this episode, we'll tell the story of Orduja, the pre-colonial warrior heroine who is one aspect of the Babaylan personified. We'll dip our minds with reverence into the spirit and magic of this sacred spring of world knowledge, and we'll just try as usual to learn a little something and not fuck it up.
You aren't being a proper woman, therefore you must be a witch. You must be a witch.
Sara is Pio Quinto, writing her grandmother Lola's healing spirituality into a context of Babaylan history, gives us a clue to reading this tradition as witch history. She talks about discovering Barbara Tedlock's book, Women in the Shaman's Body. In this book, Tedlock takes a fascinating expedition into this ancient tradition from its prehistoric beginnings to the work of women shamans across the globe today, illuminating the long-hidden female roots of the world's oldest form of religion and medicine. She argues that humankind's first spiritual and healing practice was originally the domain of women. In this narrative, Tedlock reveals the hidden and often ignored or dismissed female roots of religious and healing practices with a dazzling array of evidence, from prehistoric African rock art to modern Mongolian ceremonies for women's shamanic powers. Among others, this book has made me acutely aware of the demonization of wise women by an androcentric culture that first labeled them as witches and burned them alive, and later vilified their gifts by calling them quack. As Barbara Tedlock tells me that the first shaman was a woman, my heart leaps at the thought that my Lola's story adds another evidence of the primacy of women's role in this life-giving, cosmos-shaping tradition. I should say, this essay, and others we'll get to get into, come from Lenny Mendoza Strobel's revelatory collection, Babaylan, Filipinos and the Call of the Indigenous. I love this beautiful book, and Lenny Strobel's writing on her own journey that started as an academic interest and unfolded into a revelatory homecoming of personal Babaylan knowingness is a generous and loving spirit guide for anyone seeking a path from their daily work back to their ancestors. You can start with her YouTube talks and website as entry points for understanding Babaylan spirituality. But then if you have the means, we always want to triumph spending the money to buy the books from the women whom we lovingly call witches who have taken the time to teach us. Side note, I am always struggling to not make these history episodes sound super wonky, so as usual, I'm not going to drop the full reference every time, but also as usual, we'll link to all our sources in the show notes on our website, missingwitches.com. Of Princess Orduja, Tara Maxwell writes that the first written record of her appears in the Berber Muslim explorer, botanist, and judge Ibn Battuta's account of his world travels from 1325 to 1354. Make an image in your mind of traveling the world in the 1300s. Battuta's account is called A Gift to Those Who Contemplate the Wonders of Cities and the Marvels of Traveling. And it offers insights from the perspective of an Islamic legal scholar in early days of Islamic conversions and collisions with Buddhism, Hinduism, and early Christianity, and on the lives of people in over 40 countries in the medieval period, from China to the Volga River Valley, from Alexandria to Maghreb to Tanzania. Ibn Battuta describes sailing to a place called Kailukari in the land of Tawalisi, where he met Urduja, a local princess. She was a brave warrior, and her people were opponents of the Yuan dynasty, the unified Mongolian dynasty under Kublai Khan. She is described as an idolater, but she could write the phrase Bismillah in Islamic calligraphy. The Bismillah is the Islamic phrase Bismillahi Rahmanahi Rahi, in the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful. The phrase is considered magical in folk Islam traditions, so maybe we can imagine Urduja picking it up, adding it to her arsenal as a warrior priestess of a pre-colonial religion. Maswell writes, "En route to China, Battuta encounters the lovely princess while visiting the island of Tawalisi, an egalitarian kingdom where the women ride horses, understand archery, and fight like the men. Impressed by Urduja's courtly grace and intelligence, Battuta notes that she speaks Arabic and Turkish, and reads from the Quran, leads an army of men and women soldiers, and controls the South China Sea with her pirate ships. She is skilled in archery and hand-to-hand combat. In one fierce battle, Urduja breaks through enemy lines, kills the enemy king, and brings back his head on a spear." Let's keep this queen in mind. Head held high, heads on spears, taking magic phrases from the tongues of those who might convert her, defending her egalitarian island people. Let's hold her in our mind's eye, blazing, and pull back to put her in the broader context of the Babai Lan. Because the Babai Lan is a warrior witch and more. More from Leni Mendoza-Strobel and from other authors in her collection. What is a Filipina Babai Lan? The Babai Lan in Filipino indigenous tradition is a person who is gifted to heal the spirit and the body, the one who serves the community through her role as a folk therapist, wisdom keeper, and philosopher, the one who provides stability to the community's social structure, the one who can access the spirit realms and other states of consciousness and traffic easily in and out of these worlds, the one who has vast knowledge of healing therapies. Babai Lan, indigenous, shaman, healer, priestess, ritualist, herb doctor, village therapist, diviner, mediator between ordinary and non-ordinary realms of reality. She/he is known by other names in various tribes. Ma'aram, Balian, Balian, Mumbaki, Dawak, Catalonan, Manogbulong, Tambalan, and more. In the many tribal communities, governance structure that included the tribal chief or datu, the bayani, warrior, and the pandey, craftsperson, no decisions were ever made without consulting the Babai Lan. These four pillars of a tribe held together the communal life of its members, but the Babai Lan seemed the most important and powerful, and hence became the target of extermination as soon as colonizers arrived in the islands in the 15th century. Today there are still primary Babai Lans in indigenous communities in the Philippines. And outside of these land-based communities, the Babai Lan is now often disguised and donning a different dress and language. She walks among us like a shadow, revealing herself only to those whose souls cry out for her. The majority of Babai Lan are women, and when men take on the same role and functions as they started doing during the Hispanic colonial period, they usually wear women's clothes. One can surmise that this shift in outerwear might be symbolic of the privileged role of the Babai Lan as a woman's domain. However, it can also be argued that this privileging of the female gender in this case can be contested by citing a Filipino creation story where the creator splits a bamboo and simultaneously creates male and female. In this sense, according to Catherine de Guia, the man Babai Lan honors the mother goddess, Earth, when he approaches her, and doing this develops his feminine side in order to balance his masculinity. Likewise, the woman Babai Lan would develop her masculine side to stabilize her tenderness and all-consuming compassion toward all life forms. This is why these women lived alone on the fringes of the villages, the heads of enemies on bamboo stakes, while the men, in ceremonial malongs, wore fragrant flowers in their hair. This derives from the bilateral egalitarian kinship system that is at the root of our indigenous cultures. When the Spanish colonized the Philippines, the Babai land was considered a threat to the colonial and Christianization project. It is the role and function of the Babai land to mediate between the world of the spirits and the human and non-human world, and remember for us the deep connectedness between worlds, thus suturing and healing the split in our psyche. And so maybe it is the role of witch in every culture, especially in the post-traumatic culture, to suture and heal the splits in our psyches, to wake and lead us out of the repetition of trauma to the great exhilarating calm of connection to everything. Pre-colonial Philippines was neither a patriarchy nor a matriarchy. The division of labor between men and women was a harmony. In a country that lived balanced between destructive waves of fire and water, volcanic eruptions and typhoon, men and women shared in danger equally to nurture and protect their children. When the Spaniards in the 1500s co-opted the Datu, the leaders of the indigenous people who declared their loyalty to the Spanish, the Babai land resisted fiercely. And then they resisted creatively, adopting Christianity to survive, becoming Paisan chanters. They functioned as a priesthood, Christians who balanced between the material and non-material world, explains Dr. Faye Mangajas in Centennial Crossings, readings on Babai land feminism in the Philippines. When the Babai lands became rivals of the Spanish priests, the latter called them bruja, or witches, who allegedly dabbled in black magic. They were demonized and systematically exterminated during the first 100 years of Spanish colonization in the Philippines, and not just murdered, but cut in pieces and fed to crocodiles. So heavy was the oppressor's terror of these women and of the transgressive men who lovingly put on women's clothes and worshipped the divine feminine. And if that sounds familiar as a pattern of dominance and terror, it should. 2017 was the worst year ever for violence against transgender people in the United States until 2018 came around. The cycle echoes, and we have to keep reaching through walls and worlds and across cultures and times to decolonize ourselves and heal. Make a circle, and then bring each other into the middle to be safe. So let's be clear. Missing witches believe if you are transgender, you are a brave being of magic, and it is every witch's and human's responsibility to protect you. We also believe that witch hunts have been and are a weapon of capitalism. Check out this super fucking badass article. It's called Witches and Class Struggle. It was in Jacobin magazine. Sylvia Federici wrote it, and I would quote the whole goddamn thing, but let's just do this. Feminists were quick to recognize that hundreds of thousands of women could not have been massacred and subjected to the cruelest tortures unless they posed a challenge to the power structure. They also realized that such a war against women, carried out over a period of at least 2 centuries, was a turning point in the history of women in Europe. The original sin in the process of social degradation that women suffered with the advent of capitalism. What has not been recognized is that the witch hunt was one of the most important events in the development of capitalist society and the formation of the modern proletariat. For the unleashing of a campaign of terror against women, unmatched by any other persecution, weakened the resistance of the European peasantry to the assault launched against it by the gentry and the state at a time when the peasant community was already disintegrating under the combined impact of land privatization, increased taxation, and the extension of state control over every aspect of social life. The witch hunt deepened the divisions between women and men, teaching men to fear the power of women, and destroyed a universe of practices, beliefs, and social subjects whose existence was incompatible with the capitalist work discipline. So, to be a witch then, to find the women and men who have been called witch and honor them, is not just a spiritual act, not just a healing act. It is an act of resistance and of decolonization. Artist Alma Orduja Quinto is a modern-day Babai land, an artist activist who creates art inspired by her work with the child survivors of rape and incest, women migrant workers, women laborers, differently abled and street children, Moro women, peace journalists, orphans, prostitutes, Baikal evacuees, and other participants of her art workshops in various museums, academic institutions, and communities all over the Philippines. Quinto first learned about Orduja from her mother and grandmother. but in college she embraced her and all her attributes. She writes, "I see myself as a contemporary Babai Lan, just like all other women who recognize their power to transform and exercise this power to create a peaceful and nurturing environment." Her appropriation of the name Urduja reveals a kind of born-again commitment to Urduja's legacy. As Quinto recalls, she adopted Urduja's name to disseminate information about the pre-colonial ruler. Perla Daly is a designer, art director, and cyber activist who might fit the description we sketched of a techno-shaman or digital witch from last season's Brenda Laurel offering. As a visual communicator and art director, she earns a living designing for companies like Apple and Google and IBM, but she also contributes design and writing to the contemporary flowering of the Babai Lan. Daly is the artist behind the Babai Lan mandalas, a polyglot of symbols, echoes, and references to indigenous spirituality. She also developed meditation guides based on Angeles Arien's archetypes in the Fourfold Way that focus on the Babai Lan spirit and leadership, specifically for Filipino women willing to learn from the Babai Lan path. Of these, she writes, "Healer, water. My first understanding of the Babai Lan was from personal experience. I realized that the Hilo is a Babai Lan. He or she is the village healer or Hilo. Bone setter, massage therapy, an herbolario, herbalist. Our family had one or two favorites in the barrio. A healer removes dis-ease and disease and brings about health and wholeness in the physical and emotional well-being of the community. Seer, visionary, air. My second understanding of the Babai Lan from personal experiences was of the seer or psychic truth-teller. Most of these Hilos I encountered also had the gift of third sight. They peered at you as if looking through to your very soul, and they knew things about you, your past, your future. Through the bumps and depressions of your skull, the shape of your bones, by reading cards, or just by looking at you. A visionary intuits and perceives truth and understanding and shares this with family and or community, from which action is taken to move forward toward harmony and peace. Teacher, Earth. The teacher harvests knowledge and heritage, processes, nurtures, and develops knowledge and heritage, and plants seeds for future generations to harvest. I met two women who embodied the teacher archetype outright. The first was Lenny, who was an associate professor who taught and was writing, publishing, and bringing about active community dialogue on the topic of decolonization. This discussion of decolonization was also a process of individual and community healing. So here was a very good example of a teacher archetype doing work with essential healing, thus dual essences of teacher and healer within her work. The other teacher was a young woman named Bing. She worked in the Ilocos Mountains. Having learned the oral histories in song, she was taught by tribal storytellers throughout those hills. She traveled from village to village to learn and impart legends in poetry and song and music. She was an initiated and honored Babai Lan, one of the youngest, who was eager to receive the seeds of heritage from our elders and spread and plant them within the communities. Warrior, fire. I was exploring the deeper meaning of feminism for a few years by this time, and had already come to the realization that the feminist was embodied by a few archetypes, too. One of these is the warrior, the fiery, angry woman who demands justice and equality. So my third understanding of the Babai Lan as a leader was the warrior. In Philippine culture, we have these Babai Lan warriors named as historical Gabriela Silang and the legendary princess, Urduja. I realized that feminism and Babai Lans were related somehow, and I was determined to figure out how. As I began to find my own voice and express it in online communities such as newfilipina.com and in online discussion groups, and as I witnessed other brave women and men find their voices to speak up on behalf of the exploited or the oppressed, I realized that the Babai Lan spirit of the warrior is in us when we speak up, and openly, for justice, and risk the consequences of the powers that be and society at large. Priestess, light. My understanding of Babai Lan as a ritualist, or priestess, was given to me when I read both the books of Mary Lou Hardillo, Werninga, and Eileen Tabios. They both define Babai Lan as women community healers, leaders, and priestesses. The word priestess resonated with me and made me excited. It was a new discovery of roles that were actually possible for women in the past, in my own people's history. and possibly in the present, because it just so happened that I had become acquainted with my first Filipina priestess, Leticia, while in my first days of publishing Bagong Pinay. Leticia was ordained in 3 goddess traditions, including the Temple of Isis and the Dianic tradition. During her first formal training by elders that included rituals and women's mysteries, she reached into her ancestral roots, finding what she could in the ethnographic writings, thanks to Linda Nietes, the Mandala tribal practices of the Bailan as guide. Daily lives and gives life to a kind of diversity of practice that is hyper-contemporary in our interconnected times, and also true to pre-Spanish Philippines. Catrin de Guia describes the Babaylan as she who still knows sacred time and space, and who remembers this with every cell of her body before she was interpolated by history. The Filipina, as culture bearer, has colonial history written in her body. Because of this colonial miseducation that centers Spanish and American influences, de Guia writes that what is hardly mentioned in Babaylan literature are the Buddhist and Muslim influences on the Filipino culture. These influences are hardly mentioned in English and Spanish texts, yet if we consider that the Babaylan epitomizes the global animist, the Asian Buddhist, the Oriental Muslim, traditional European, modern American, and postmodern global culture, doesn't this make the shamanic tradition of the Babaylan so unbelievably rich? It's not even the layers that are important, but the retention of ancestral memory, despite all the layers, integrating matching elements due to the inherent including strength of the Kapwa culture. The Babaylan is recognized by her community as this embodiment of the power of Kapwa. This is what sets her apart. All would-be Babaylans are culture bearers, but not all culture bearers are necessarily Babaylan. What is Kapwa? It is at the heart of a Babaylan philosophy, and I think it's the key to understanding witchcraft as a revolutionary political philosophy as well. According to Lenny Mendoza Strobel, one of the most difficult questions and tasks about dismantling privilege is this requirement to shift our understanding of the self from the I to we, Kapwa. In the latter, we, privileged Americans, or Canadians, must begin to know and feel deeply that our affluent lifestyles have a social cost and a social burden that is carried by the poor of the world and by the earth. One of the most important features of the indigenous knowledge systems and practices is the tendency to see the world with all its beings as a holistic system where things operate interdependently. Harmony with other people and the environment is a much-needed trait today in our shrinking global village. This orientation is called Kapwa, the shared self. Perla Daly says she created her Babaylan mandala to be a gift of healing for a people whose identity and dignity were fragmented historically, who lost their connection to their ancestors, their noble beliefs, and their ancestral pride, who lost the awareness of their inner gold in a striking parallel to the loss of the immense wealth of gold that was once abundant in the islands before the conquistadores brought it back to Spain. She offers this rallying cry, and I hope hearing it will give you light and strength for the battle we fight together to decolonize our minds and our lands. If it helps, close your eyes and remember Orduja, beloved leader of warriors, women, and men. She who would take the language of those who would meet her or convert her to forge her own magic, taking the heads of her would-be violators and taking no shit, giving all those who would defend the earth and our profound interconnectedness the fire of her vivid magic. The Babaylan mandala represents you, your soul and existence in the cosmos. You are the Bahala, tree of life at the center of creation. With symbols and sacred numbers, the mandala tells you you are Kapwa, kin, connected to everything. Earth, water, air, and fire, seen and unseen, dark and light, macrocosm and microcosm, you are not alone. You are kin, Kapwa, to all blessed beings and creation. Beautiful, beloved, blessed friend, behold, see how expansive and unalone you truly are. You are Kapwa, kin, connected to everything. You are Kapwa, kin, connected to everything.
You must be a witch.
Thanks for listening to the Missing Witches podcast. Be sure to come back Wednesday for Witches Found, when I speak to Nurse Witch Nova about mental health, physical health, radical compassion, and one of our favorite books, Witches, Midwives, and Nurses. In the meantime, hit us up at missingwitches@gmail.com or on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter @missingwitches. And blessed be.